Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hey, what's up? Welcome back to Surf Splendor. This is your host, David Scales, bringing you an all-new episode of Surf News. We actually recorded this on March 3rd. I'm publishing it on March 5th. So let's just call it Surf News for the first week of March 2017. I wanted to say a quick thanks to everyone who sent feedback about the Mark Healy episode that I published last week. Mark's a great guest and provided a lot of insight into the world of big wave surfing, both competitively and just what's required of a human being in terms of health and wellness. And Mark turned out to be really articulate, and I really just enjoyed my time with him, and seems like people enjoyed that episode. So if you haven't listened to that yet, go ahead and go back and find that either on your podcasting app or, of course, everything. All past episodes of Surf Splendor are available on surfsplendorpodcast.com. Everything is there for free. And along those lines, I also wanted to say thanks to everybody who's donated, contributed finances to this show. Scott's been producing surf podcasts for 10 years. I've been doing this Surf Splendor show for 3.5 years. And we were doing it completely for free up until October when we set up a donation platform. And we've just been asking people to set up a $5 subscription via PayPal. $5 is negligible enough to where you probably would not notice it missing out of your budget. And yet it goes a long way actually to supporting this show. So if you've done that, I thank you. If you are able to do that, we would be hugely grateful for it. And if we get enough of those $5 monthly donations, Scott and I plan to do weekly episodes rather than every other week. So you can look forward to that. In the near future, I'm sure we'll get there. And until then, I hope that you enjoy this week's episode of Surf News. Scott and I had a lot to cover after not being able to get together for about 3 or 4 weeks' time. And of course, we're leading into the 2017 WSL season, so plenty to discuss. This is a supersized episode. Hope that you enjoy it. I will be back at the end of the episode to sign us off. Thanks.
Yeah, guy.
Welcome, everybody. Down the line, Surf Talk Podcast. Scott Bass and David Lee Scales with you. And we're seeing all good people. Yes.
What a feel-good start to the show.
Such a good song.
Crank it up, man.
Isn't it a great song?
It's a great song.
Optimism. How underrated? How underrated is Yes? Yes underrated?
I don't think so. I think everybody has mad respect.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Not only a great song, but a great message too.
Super great message, and well, I mean, look, all musicians that get to that level are incredible, but these guys are intense musicians, like over the top.
Yeah.
Virtuosos?
Yeah, virtuosos.
Virtuosos, these guys. Wow. John Anderson and the others. And yeah, Yes is one of those bands that when I was in high school, it's kind of like Rush. Like you couldn't admit that you liked them.
Yeah.
But as you mature and get older, you're like, oh my God, I've always loved that band. You know?
And you can't help but appreciate their musicianship. And the same thing with Rush.
Exactly.
Like phenomenal musicians.
Exactly, you know? Right.
So I actually just watched a documentary on Rush. I'm struggling to think of the name of it. I think
I've
it's a couple
it.
Years old. You
it's
have seen
really
it.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah. It's really good. Where Neil Peart, the drummer, goes on a motorcycle ride and comes back to the band, right?
Yeah.
That one?
Yeah.
Where he sessions with some really incredible jazz drummers and he learns that the most important beat is the beat between the beats.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's a great... I forget the name of it, too.
I'll look it up while we're talking.
But it's an incredible documentary if you're a fan of Rush.
Beyond the Lighted Stage.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And they talk about the period where they went from the bass to the piano, and it was a horrific time in Rush history. If you were a Rush fan, you couldn't believe... It was like blasphemy that they got rid of the bass.
Well, I mean, a lot of bands make transitions. Like, as an artist, you want to evolve, you know? So that's
absolutely
a pretty common thing. But, of course, for the core audience,
exactly,
it's hard to watch them start riding Firewire surfboards.
Oh, hey, maybe that's a great analogy, you know? By the way, Downline Surf Talk Podcast, David and Scott, I know I've said that, but it is Friday, March 3rd, and we've been gone for 3 weeks, and we apologize, and we promise to make this show
twice as good. Three times better?
I don't know about that, but twice as long.
Okay.
I don't know about three times.
Well, we started an hour earlier today. It's an early, early morning here in Southern California. Scott's got a fresh cup of tea. I've got my cup of coffee. We avoided traffic a little bit, right? Was traffic lighter for you?
Yes, it was light traffic coming up here.
Maybe we should do it at this time every week.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah, I'm totally down with it.
But there are those that have subscribed, and we appreciate your subscription, and we're doing our best to fulfill our obligation. Now, David went to Cuba, and I went to Utah, so that's why we weren't around. It wasn't like we were lazy. We were living a full and fruitful and diligent life.
Well, I would say Cuba and Utah are equally foreign culturally compared to Southern California.
Yes. Now, I saw your excuse me, Instagram.
Yeah.
And you were in Cuba, and of course, you're a social media animal. And I saw that you were with a fine young woman friend.
That I was. That's how we do it.
Yes.
Travel in Paris.
Is that your girlfriend?
Yeah, it is, actually.
What's her name?
Her name's Brittany.
Brittany.
Dang, dude, you're putting me on
blast. This is news to me. I mean, the funny thing is, those that listen to the show know this, but David and I don't even really know each other. We only know each other in this realm, we don't like hang out. We don't live near each other, which is sort of sad because I'm sure I would benefit from hanging out.
Well,
with
thanks.
You more.
No, we've got a lot in common, but we've never surfed together.
I don't know your social, you know, status. I don't know your socioeconomic status. I don't know your education. I don't know where you went to college. I don't know anything about you. Really.
It's modest. Bachelor's degree in psychology, Cal State University, Long Beach.
Oh, see, I'm a Cal State San Marcos, so we're both Cal State graduates.
Yeah, not something to be proud of.
Exactly, right?
That's why you haven't heard it yet, is because I don't advertise that.
Which is why we're pitching for $5 donations
exactly.
on a podcast.
Exactly. No, but yeah, we had a blast, actually.
How long have you been seeing Brittany?
Since like October-ish.
Oh, cool. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, no, it's great. But yeah, Cuba. Want
Cuba.
Me to give you a quick rundown?
Please, give us a rundown. Did you go surfing in Cuba?
No, never even went in the ocean, believe it or not. It's kind of bizarre. Even
is it a
though,
blue ocean? A gorgeous blue ocean?
Yeah, it is. And even, like, I was in Havana the whole time, which is a city, obviously, a pretty big city. But even though it's right on the water, there's basically a seawall that runs the entire length of the city. So you can't even get into the water. To get to a sandy beach, it's a 45-minute drive away. and nobody was in the water. There was a few over the course of 5 days. I saw maybe seven fishermen fishing off the seawall, but very, very few. Like, nobody's using the ocean, which is really bizarre. I noticed there was a couple opportunities to climb down the seawall to jump into the ocean if you wanted to, but it was kind of sketchy to climb back up it, you know, so I never actually did it. And we were having a blast anyways. It wasn't like I even missed it, to be honest, but definitely no waves in that part of the country. I got advice from some people on where there would be waves, but you'll recall on this show, I just said, hey, I don't know anything about Cuba. I haven't researched it really, and I'm going. But if any listeners have been, you should send me recommendations and advice. I got an outpouring of advice. Really, really, really helpful stuff. And I've compiled all that information. I used it for my advantage while I was there, but I've synthesized what was good advice and what didn't apply and added some of my own into a document that is now a PDF. So if anybody's going to Cuba and they want that information, I will pass it along.
Wow.
Our listeners paid it forward to me. I'm going to go ahead and pay it forward to the next guy because honestly, it was super helpful. We had the food's not phenomenal, but like but it was good. We were eating in the nicest restaurants in the country and it was so inexpensive. But even the best restaurants aren't really up to par with what you and I are used to in Southern California, of course. Tons of meat. Not a lot of vegetables, and yeah. Even the vegetables they do have, it's not like as fresh as what we're used to in Southern California. But the food, the atmosphere, that we ate, like the places that we ate in, the atmosphere was unbeatable. You know, rooftops, these really old, beautiful colonial buildings. All the architecture there is like incredible. From like the least expensive apartments that families with hardly any money are living in to the big palatial estates. It's all magnificent.
From now, I watched a 60 Minutes episode a couple of weeks ago, and it had a whole thing on rum. On, is it Havana Club?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know about this controversy about Havana Club?
No, I don't.
Well, there's an old recipe, and when Castro took over Cuba, the family that owned Havana Club, first of all, the communists. Castro came in and in one night killed everybody or told them to get lost. And the family that was this, you know, had this great fortune of owning this incredible rum distillery had to pack up everything and leave and get on a boat and escape.
Wow.
And they took the recipe with them. And the recipe now resides and was sold to, I think, somebody in Puerto Rico or somebody in the United States, maybe in Florida, who now makes Havana Club. Excuse me. But of course, Castro makes Havana Club. Cuba, the country, makes Havana Club.
Right.
And they say that they have the recipe. And there's a big trademark infringement. And it's a big source of pride in Cuba, the brand Havana Club. It's stronger than Coca-Cola here
Very
in the United
so.
States. It's like
yeah.
everywhere. Like
it is.
Havana Club is like on
it's
airplanes.
Full you know? Monopoly.
Yeah, it's a full
for
on.
That
yeah.
yeah.
And so there's this interesting, you know, polarization regarding who actually owns Havana Club and which is the true Havana Club. And the Cubans will tell you that Castro's Havana Club, probably because they have to or they'll get killed. And then, of course, you know, the people in Florida. And I think it's now owned by some big distillery.
Sure.
Smirnoff or somebody. I don't know.
Interesting. I had no idea. But that is definitely true that is kind of the national brand.
Yeah.
One thing I will say about it, one of the best experiences there was just how hospitable and gracious the people were. It felt like the city itself felt similar to a lot of other Latin American cities that I've been to, but the people were so much nicer and there was no threat of danger at any point. There was no threat of even feeling like you were going to get ripped off because you're a white American or something like that.
Right.
Like normally you go to a lot
Mexico
of other countries
City.
Or Italy, even what you got to double check the bill when you get it for dinner to make sure they didn't tack on a bunch of stuff, you know?
Oh, right.
And there's just a lot of stuff like that. You always have to be on guard with when you're traveling. This had none of that. And I don't know if it's just a feature of not living in a capitalist society, but there was like, there didn't seem to be any desire for one guy to step on another guy's throat to get ahead of him. And even with cabbies, like we'd walk up to a group of cabbies and be like, hey, we need to get from here to there. And one guy would negotiate the price and then go, all right, well, my buddy's going to take you. And he'd pass us off to the next guy. They weren't even trying to get our cab fare, you know, because they didn't care. Because, right. Like I said, everything was equal.
There was no reason to care, no reason. So interesting, right?
Yeah.
The reaction that you're getting based on the communist culture that they've lived in, the socialist culture, where it's like, why get ahead? Because we can't.
Right.
But there was a sense that you got that this was a good thing. And I think your sense is correct, right? Because there was no threat. You didn't feel threatened by the exploitation.
There was no
exploitation.
That
capitalism often
yeah.
creates.
And again, there's pros and cons to everything, and I'm sure. not advocating
no,
for
I know you're not.
Of course. But like, I just noticed there was weird details every once in a while. They were just like, huh, why aren't they doing things? And then you realize, you're like, oh, it's because
they can't get ahead.
Right.
What's the use of trying if it doesn't do anything?
Yeah.
How did the Chop Hop get received in Havana?
You know, when I first showed up, I got a few weird looks. But by the end of the trip, I saw people walking around with Chop Hops. I think it started to kind of infiltrate
that
their style.
Me.
Yeah. I think now it's going to be a trend now. Like the Jennifer Aniston back in the 90s,
right.
But like of dudes' haircuts. I actually saw a Salon Kardashian.
All right.
Yeah, it was literally like named that. I think they're just fully playing on the actual
sure.
Kardashians. It has to be that, right?
Sure.
So I thought that was kind of funny. But phenomenal. Like, honestly, it was so inexpensive. They're doing direct flights out of LAX right now, which were also cheap. So it's a 4.5-hour flight for us. It's super inexpensive to be there.
Direct flight or into Miami?
Direct.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would say go, and the sooner the better, because it's just going to turn into, of course, Miami Part 2 or something
right.
like that, you know?
Right.
But right now, it was just, we had a fantastic time. We booked everything through Airbnb,
yeah,
which was a great way to do it. So...
Did you have your Make America Great Again hat on?
No, I did not. The other big thing is Hemingway, of course, lived there and has a home that you can visit. So, and they have a lot of pride for him. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're at all a fan of Hemingway, that's just interesting to see all that stuff.
Yeah. Are you a fan of Hemingway?
Big time.
Really?
Yeah.
Misogyny?
Big time, man. Misogyny. Misogyny, alcoholism,
yeah,
exactly. Wife abuse. I love it all.
Makes a good writer. Yeah. Oh, Lord.
So, do you have any follow-up stuff from previous month that we've been off?
I'm sure that I do, but I don't, because it just feels like we have a full plate of things to talk about.
We do, but let me reference two things that listeners sent us.
All right.
You were asking on the last show if Silvana Lima will get properly credited for kind of pioneering aerials and women's surfing.
Yeah.
And we discussed that, and we talked about how she's kind of fallen off tour and she'll never be seen again. I got a name... comment on surfsplendorpodcast.com from Adam Baldwin that said, you do realize Silvana is back on tour this year. She won the last QS of the year in Australia to get back on tour. So I did not know that, Adam Baldwin. Apparently I don't follow the women's QS nearly closely enough, but I did look it up on WSL's website, and Adam is correct. So we will see Silvana Lima back on tour starting, I think, next week. I also got a comment from Tim B who said, David and Scott, on the subject of surf contest coverage, I would really enjoy watching a WSL contest with you guys doing the live commentary as a podcast. Obviously, a whole contest would not be feasible, but how about doing a final? It could have an intro and the final and some comments at the end. Failing that, I really enjoyed the time you rescored the final with a judge. Maybe, that was an episode I did a couple years ago. So what do you think about that idea, Scott? You and I maybe doing like a live Facebook, or now Instagram has a live feature as well, watching the final for something. Maybe the Snapper event. I don't know what time of day that happens for us, but we could watch the final together and give them a commentary.
Snapper will probably be pretty late in the evening for us. But yeah, no, I'm up for it.
That'd be rad, right?
I mean, if people tune in, right? If no one's listening, it'll be lame, but...
I think people will tune in. I think we got to give it a shot at least. I've had that comment from people in the past. And of course, we criticize the commentators on the WSL feed all the time. So... I think we'll
learn real quick how difficult it is.
I agree, but we got it. If we've been talking crap, we got it.
Yeah, no, I'm up for it for sure. Let's you and I figure that out.
Yeah. All right. I'm down. Well, now it's easy with Facebook and Instagram. They make it so easy that the tech's already there. We just need to push record. But by the way, both those comments were on surfsplendorpodcast.com, which is a great way to engage with Scott and I. Obviously, this conversation isn't just between he and I. I got a couple of other comments that I won't get into, but one of them was just saying, like, dude, I sit in my car and I'll hear Scott make a point, and I'm like, yeah, Scott, tell David what's up. And then David will make a counterpoint, and I'll be like, yeah, actually, David's making a very salient point. And the guy was saying that he basically, like, he's having an argument in his head with us while he's listening to the show, you know? So, anyways, if you want to leave that feedback, do it on surfsplendorpodcast.com or, of course, Instagram or whatever.
All right. Well, I've got some email here since we're going to go that way. Says, hey, Scott, you are awesome, man. I love the show. You and the Chop Hopper are hilarious. Thanks for doing what you're doing. By the way, one subject I have not heard you cover that I would love to hear more about is introducing kids to surfing. I have a one-year-old and wonder about when you get him in the water. I live in the Bay Area, so it's cold and sharky and big, and it's not that easy. And you've mentioned your kids on the show a couple of times, so maybe you have something to say. Thanks again. Show always keeps me laughing, stoked, and looking forward to the weekend when I can get into the water. Drew. So thank you, Drew. David and I thank you for the email. And here's my commentary on kids and getting kids into the ocean. First of all, I think way too many people do it too young. You know, you see it on Instagram. You see pros with their like 18-month-old baby who has no clue what's going on. And that's, I think, really a vanity play and an ego play when you take your 18-month-old kid out surfing. The kid's not enjoying it. The kid doesn't even know what's up. And I think that that will backfire. It can backfire. Now, it doesn't always backfire, and each kid and each situation is different. My opinion, and I'm not a child rearing expert, is let the kid find it on his own. It's been my experience that when I force my kid into something, he usually rebels. And when I tell him he can't do it, he wants to go and try to do it. Mm. So I would tell my son, Hank, I'm like, I'm going surfing and you're not allowed to come. And he'd be like, what do you mean? I want to go, you know, and before you know it, we're surfing Uluwatu together.
Nice.
So
I'm studying quantum physics, Hank, and you're not allowed to study it with me.
Yeah, I'm having fun with quantum physics. You're not allowed. So anyway, that's my take on it. But again, each kid and each situation is completely different, and it's hard to put a blanket concept on it.
Okay. Devil's advocate is a guy who has never raised a kid.
But a nice chop hop.
Let's say the 18-month-old, you're not necessarily taking them to teach them how to surf, but you're just enveloping them in Mother Nature. You're taking them back to the womb, into the water. Like, I see benefit in that spiritually, you know, just like, hey, get them in the cold water. Like, there's nothing.
I don't know about cold water, but maybe.
Dude, cold water is great for you, man.
I'm just saying, you don't want the kid to go, oh, I hate going there.
Of course. I get that psychology of it. But I do think that, like, almost innately, kids love the water. They love the sand. They want to go
warm water
in it.
Yeah, yeah, warm, cozy water, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're experts.
On both surfing and child rearing.
We got a bunch of stuff.
Well, let's get into it.
I was just reading Ben Spencer's thing that you were telling me about. Yeah. His email.
Yeah.
Well, look, you know what? Next time we'll get into, we got a lot of really great emails from people here. And next time, let's get into some emails.
Okay.
But we've got so much to do. And David and I promise to be back in 2 weeks or sooner.
Sure.
And we'll get into it. Because I see emails here from Chris Johnson, from Lost Grove, from Adam Baldwin, from Austin Stevenson, Greg McGrath, Cameron, Ben Spencer, Oakley Davis. We got a lot of emails here.
By the way, Chris Johnson's emails. He's in New Zealand.
Oh, Chris, yes, from New Zealand. He's quite the character.
Yeah. He sends hilarious emails that I'm not sure how factual some of them are. I need to really like cross-reference and check some of the details, but they are very, very detailed and they seem scientific at times, but I just don't know the science to disagree. But I've replied to him a few times and then they bounce back. I can't reply to him. So,
oh, really? I don't know.
I know. I've gotten replies from you going back to him as well. But I just want to let Chris know, like, hey, dude, I haven't just ignored all your emails. I get them and I read them. But
yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks for all the emails. Now, some of the big news that just recently happened, and then we'll go backwards from there. This is what's interesting about you going to Cuba and me going to Utah, is that I'm going to tell you now, David, that I had this news about Samsung breaking out and leaving the WSL way before it hit the news wire. And you and I were going to have breaking news on this because I got the rumor from the very, very deep inside. Mm. And I was very excited about it. And then we had to cancel our show last week.
So when did you get the rumor?
I got the rumor 3 days before it hit anywhere, Beach Grid or anything.
Okay.
And I got it as that. I got it as such. I got it as, hey, this is a rumor, but it's from a reliable source. Samsung is pulling out of the WSL. Now, from my same source, anonymous, this is what else I have learned.
Ooh.
Again, at this point, rumor. It hasn't reached Beach Grid or anyone else, but this is what I'm hearing.
And the other rumor checked out is valid, so that gives right, this from the one same a little source. Bit more credibility.
Right. Right. And that is
I already believe it. I don't care what
yeah,
it says.
Good. You should. That is that what I'm hearing from the Coconut Wireless Grapevine rumor mill is that the Big Wave Tour is going to be trimmed down to three events and three events only. Jaws, because it's cheap to do and there's a crew in Hawaii. Puerto Escondido, again, easy and cheap. And is it Nazare or Nazir? Yep. Nazare. As those guys get paid to go over there, probably the WSL gets paid by the Chamber of Commerce in Portugal or somebody. But all the other venues are free to run their own events and be a part of another tour. And the Big Wave Surfers, oh, by the way, are not obligated to be exclusive to one or the other. So the Big Wave Surfers, according to this rumor, are now free to do whatever.
Hmm.
And there will only be three Big Wave events, Jaws, Puerto Escondido, and Nazare.
Hmm.
Again, only rumor at this point. I don't want to upset the apple cart, or I know Peter Mel probably doesn't want to hear me talking about this, but maybe Pete can respond to some texts from us and some emails, and we'll get some deep insight.
Well,
but that's what I'm hearing, and it seems to make sense based on the bigger news, which we haven't commented on, which is Samsung pulling out. David, give me your thoughts.
Well, I'm going to backtrack to the Big Wave thing. In 2016, they only ran three events, it looks like. So even though there was six events on the schedule or whatever there were, they only end up running three because there's only enough, you know, the swell and the timing and all that sort of stuff. So that begs the question, if three didn't run last year, what if three don't run in 2017?
Well, right when you said that, that same thought went through my head. And when you look at the three they've chosen, Jaws has been, you've been able to run Jaws every year. Puerto Escondido, guaranteed you can run a Big Wave event at Puerto Escondido. I guarantee you, the month of July, there's 25-foot waves there every year. And I use July, but it could be August, whatever. And then Nazare, the same.
Okay.
Nazare, you were wanting it to be smaller. So I think when they, and again, we're just running off of this rumor, but if we put ourselves in the WSL boardroom, and you're put yourself in their minds and they're going, which three makes sense? What, you know, what are we, you know, we've got to trim costs. Maybe that's what they're thinking, but we also need to run a great tour.
Mm-hmm.
What are the guarantees? You know, the guarantees are Jaws, Puerto Escondido, and Nazare. And I would throw Mavericks in there if it wasn't such a shit show.
Yeah.
And right now that's off the table because of
completely
the shit show that it is.
Well, interesting. This is a perfect time to discuss. Did you know that Grant Baker is the 2016 world champ?
I did, and congratulations to Twiggy Baker.
Yeah, he just got crowned a week ago.
And they ran three events, and what were those three events?
The three events were Puerto Escondido, which he won, Piahi, which he placed third, and then Nazare, he got seventh.
So those three events.
But it's like, yeah, so the, yeah, exactly. What's interesting, though, and again, all the respect in the world to Twiggy, but what's interesting is he didn't win an event or even lose an event and then they crown a champion. The crowning of the champion happens without the event. Like it happened, I don't know, when did the Nazare event finish?
Well,
a month ago?
Yeah,
and then he got crowned last week?
Yeah, and that's probably part of the streamlining, right? Is like, let's have a more streamlined process here so that we know the last event and we can have a bigger hullabaloo about it. And the reason they didn't perhaps is because, first of all, there's a lot of turmoil going on. You would suggest it would be suggested at the WSL, and there, and perhaps they were going, hey, maybe there's one last event that's on the schedule that we're waiting for, and we can't really crown Twiggy until we know if we're doing that event or not.
And then that event gets called off, and it's like, oh, well, now you're the champ. But it's so anticlimactic. Like that's my point, is that we on the shortboard men's tour, we have Pipeline at the end of the year, and everybody looks forward to it, and it's this big climax.
Not always.
Well, no, but it, in theory.
You and know? I have talked about that at length.
Of course. Yeah. So, but with the Big Wave Tour, and we all agree that it has the most potential to be the biggest money maker and garner the most eyeballs, because any non-surfer can appreciate a tiny man riding a giant mountain of water. So we know that the potential's there, but there's all these missteps along the way, and this is one of them. One of them is that I do care, and I like Grant Baker, and then I wake up in the morning bleary-eyed, and I'm scrolling Instagram, and it's like, congratulations, Twiggy. And I'm like, oh, is this a throwback Thursday post from like 6 months ago? Did he, like, there wasn't even an event. How is he now the world champion? Oh, you know.
Yeah.
I care, and I almost don't even know what's going on.
Yeah.
So that's a big problem.
Well, I think that's part of this thing.
Yeah.
Like, let's streamline this thing. Let's get it tighter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I will say this, that you mentioned that you care about Grant Twiggy Baker, and I think there's a lot of people that do. And I think there's a lot of people that don't know the true story. I think there's some deep, good documentary-type story there with him regarding Mavericks. Remember how he got shunned and was denied access to the Mavericks event because he spoke out on some level? And then he had to be all hush-hush, and he had to kiss their ass. And I think that's sort of interesting. And this, the, him winning the Big Wave World Tour is sort of, in a way, you know, it's sort of his chance to kind of wave his flag and go, hey, see you guys, Titans of Mavericks people, you know, like, I'm the friggin' Big Wave World Champion.
Yeah.
And you're not going to invite me to your event because what? Because I spoke out, because I was speaking truth.
Well, and he was, if I recall, he was the champion at that time. And then they were going to run the event and they didn't even invite him.
Yeah.
And that's where you and I were commenting, like, how do you not invite the Big Wave World champ?
Yeah, that whole Mavericks thing. Anyway, so, but back to Samson.
Well, wait.
Okay.
Talking about, he's an interesting dude. There's a lot of story. We've talked about.
We don't know it.
No, I know, but you and I have talked about that. Those stories are underdeveloped. Those storylines are underdeveloped from a production standpoint, and it's probably the WSL's job that they're not fully capitalizing on.
Yes.
Along those lines, guess who number two was this year on the Big Wave World Tour? Who placed second?
Oh, God. I'm just going to guess. Yeah, it was like Makua.
Pedro Collado.
Oh, Pedro.
Have you ever
even
heard
his name?
I have
no idea where he's from, what color his hair is, how tall he is, if he's a regular foot or a goofy foot, who his sponsors are.
No.
Help. Chris Morrow.
I know.
I think Chris is in charge of creating stories. I'm just guessing.
So that's a problem.
That's
you know
a huge
what I mean?
Problem.
Like, I've never even heard the guy's name, and I try to pay attention to everything. So Pedro got third at the Puerto Escondido Challenge, fourth at Nazare, and fifth at Piahi. So I guess maybe, you know, he's not on the podium. So that's,
is it us? Is it you and I? Are we
partially
this naive? Should we know who he is?
Well, yes, as indicated by the fact that Adam Baldwin had to let us know that Silvana Lima requalified for tour. So we're not fully, fully paying attention to every facet of surfing. But still, we have a point that is, I would argue most people don't know who Pedro Collado
is. I don't think so.
No. He's Brazilian, by the way. His hair is brown.
Well, that makes sense. Is he a regular foot or goofy foot?
That I can't tell you.
I'm guessing he's a regular foot. Mostly regular foots on this tour.
Mm,
no?
I'm looking.
That's just a guess.
I'm looking.
Anyway.
He's 5'7", 159 pounds. That's what I know.
Look, it's exciting times for the WSL to sort of dig into the Big Wave World Tour now that it's streamlined and provide us with some information about this champion.
Yeah.
We know Twiggy by name only. I think there's a lot more. I think he and others like him can really be elevated through proper storytelling.
I agree. And the other thing that I like is the most interesting characters in life, outside of surfing included, are guys who go through struggle. Challenge breeds character, you know? And so the Big Wave Tour guys are fascinating characters because, number one, they don't get paid really adequately.
Yeah.
So they're struggling to cobble together funds to get across the world. And it's expensive to travel with 9-foot boards too, you know? And then they're getting to those places and they're doing heroic feats. They are gladiators. So it takes a really special breed to even have the desire to do that and the physicality, the athleticism to do it. And then to persevere without the financial backing and still go put your life on the line, it breeds for super interesting characters, you know? So that's the ripest storyline that, that the WSL or anybody, a filmmaker, could cultivate.
Yeah, for I agree. I mean, think of how many... I bet it would be interesting just to be see a mashup of the different sponsors he's had in the last 10 years. I bet he's probably had 30 different people that he's had to, like, convince to give him some backing.
Nickels, too. They're not even giving him
right. He's cobbling it together. And then, you know... Plus, you know, Twiggy's getting on in age. His window's closing quickly in the big wave realm, I would think. And then what's his... What's his social life like? Like, does it must be tough traveling around the world. I mean, I imagine that relationships are strained.
Yeah.
And then there's the whole Mavericks thing. I just think there's a lot to uncover and a lot to excavate with him.
Right. Well, to answer your question about Samsung, they were the title sponsor for the WSL. So in the past, the model, I mean, people probably know, but the model that exists is we'd had all these individual sponsors for individual events. WSL has kind of changed the model a little bit, and they wanted to still have individual sponsored events, but they weren't able to secure a lot of them in recent years. So they've brought on these kind of title sponsors for the entire season. Samsung being one of them. I don't know if we Jeep. Jeep was one of them.
Jeep's still in, according to my sources. Jeep is in, but at lower dollars.
And everything came in at lower dollars than anticipated. And I don't remember the exact numbers or if we discussed them on the show, so I'm apprehensive to just say them now. But it was like, I think they were asking like three times what they got from Samsung. Right. You know, in the end, Samsung's like, dude, we're not paying that price. Here's what we'll pay you. Your numbers don't support it. Your numbers are all projections, and this is what we'll give you this year. And apparently... Maybe they weren't happy.
Well, Nick Carroll wrote a really good piece for, I think it was Swellnet. And he basically said, look, Samsung's been in the surf space for a long time, even before the WSL. And they sponsored guys and, you know, whoever it was, not Steph Gilmore, but maybe Sally Fitzgibbons, a bunch of surfers. And what Nick really pointed out is that, look, Samsung's like a $30 billion, or probably more, like $50 billion, maybe $100 billion. I don't know. Just ridiculous amount. So the small little nickels and dimes that they're throwing at the WSL is nothing to Samsung. And Nick sort of put it like, hey, they're just testing the waters to see if this thing is going to grow. And if it's going to grow, we'll stay with it. If we're going to get more eyeballs, we'll stay with it. And he also pointed out, hey, Samsung's throwing money at like, girls indoor volleyball and, you know, Indian cricket. And like, they're throwing money at all sorts of different sports to kind of see, okay, which ones are the ones that are growing eyeballs, and those are the ones we'll stay with. So it speaks kind of volumes that they've pulled back from surfing, which isn't, you know, as Nick pointed out, it's not necessarily a good sign for pro surfing.
Right. Google tells me, or Forbes actually tells me, that Samsung's market value in 2016 was $216 billion,
right,
with an M.
So throwing five,
I'm just kidding, billion with a B.
Yeah, with a B. So I don't need, let's just say even 20 million is nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know how much they get. They didn't give them 20 million. They probably gave them 5 million, 3 million, 1 million.
I think it was closer to one.
So they're just like, here, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
And now we're pulling out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Not good.
Not good. Not a good sign.
No.
So what does that mean moving forward for 2017? We don't really
know yet. Well, Dave Prodan put out, you know, when the WSL was asked to elaborate, they finally put out a little press saying, hey, we had a great run. We wish Samsung the best. And we're excited about some stuff sponsorship-wise that's on the that's taking place now that we'll announce shortly.
Yeah.
So what do you read into that?
I'll read you his exact quote.
Okay.
He said, in response to Beach Grit, when Beach Grit broke the rumor and then asked Prodan for a quote, he said,
that was our rumor, by the way.
Yeah.
That we never got out there.
He said, that's correct. Samsung will not be the title sponsor for the championship tour in 2017. The WSL's official statement is, quote, Samsung has been a great partner for the surfing community over the past 3 years, elevating the sport to new heights and honoring the community's heritage. We thank them for their partnership and look forward to the 2017 season. The WSL is excited about upcoming announcements in the commercial space. More to come when available. So your question is, what do we read into that?
Yeah, what do you read into upcoming announcements?
I read nothing into
kind
that.
Kind of do,
I think,
too.
I don't think...
That's just an optimistic spin.
Yeah, we're going to have announcements.
I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, but we're going to have announcement about something, so it's not a lie, but it doesn't mean that we have some bigger, better thing that we're moving on to, and we're going to infuse new cash and life into this. That's not what that means.
Would it surprise you if there was a relationship with Red, with Monster or Red Bull that
it would surprise me if it was Monster. The Red Bull thing has been, I think, on the table and off the table over the years.
But with Speaker stepping down, does that now like smooth out some of the wrinkles in relationships and maybe somebody can come in that has a Red Bull relationship?
It's possible. What my thought is remember when Kelly left Quicksilver? It was kind of like Kelly Slater as a brand has outgrown anything that Quicksilver can provide for him. Kelly Slater can go do whatever he wants. He can start a clothing company that'll rival Quicksilver. He can build a wave pool. He can build a surfboard brand. He can own the waves and the surfboards and the clothing and everything that we do as surfers because he's Kelly Slater and he's 11-time world champ. What does the WSL have to offer Red Bull? Red Bull's running the Cape Fear event. Their Vulcan Pipe Pro, they did a phenomenal job with. Like,
well, what the only thing they have is professional surfing in a format that restricts pros from being involved in Red Bull stuff. Their leverage.
For momentarily, it is.
Right,
but
exactly,
without maintaining sponsorship, how long can they continue to fund?
So does Red Bull sit on the sidelines and wait for it to implode?
And when Red Bull's tried to work with the WSL, it's like, the WSL put parameters on what they were and weren't allowed to do. You're not allowed to wear your hats on the stage. And so then Jordy Smith, who would have a Red Bull hat on, they would zoom in tighter on his face to cut out the frame of his hat.
That's all changed.
Yeah. Well, it has now. Yeah. But it's because I think WSL had to concede.
Right.
But I think Red Bull has taken the stance that I just said, which is like, hey, guys, you don't realize we're the big kids.
Right.
We're far more profitable than you guys are. We're far larger. We have more eyeballs. We have more everything. Like, why are you begging us to come play at your table? Here's what we'll offer to contribute to your table. But if you're not going to play by our rules, we'll wait it out. And when you're off the playground, we'll just start our own tour.
Yeah.
Look around.
Exactly.
Look at what we've done in motocross. Look at what we've done in skating. Look at what we've done in snowboarding.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree. That's totally it.
So, you ever drink Red Bull?
I have, but do I yearn for it? No.
I don't think I've even had one.
Oh, man. Back when I used to go to Hawaii for Surfer Magazine, I was Mick O'Brien and Jamie O'Brien were nice enough to let me set up shop and shoot photos from his backyard. And that place was just stocked with Red Bulls, man.
Oh, okay.
I got more Red Bull than I needed to deal with when I was there. But it kept you going.
I think I've been in like a social drinking environment where like that was mixed in. That's probably how I had it. But like, I've never drank a can of it. You know?
Yeah.
So anyway.
So I see here that Gabe Medina's dad has been disallowed from the WSL tour.
I read that story when it broke.
He's been suspended.
Remind me.
Charles Serrano has been, this is Gabby's stepfather, right? Charles Serrano has been suspended from attending WSL from October 2016 through April 2017. So
temporary.
That's through the snapper event, right?
Yeah. Temporary restraining order.
According to a press release. And this is what Charles said. Is it Rodriguez? I regret my actions in Portugal last October, Charles Rodriguez said. This is not the kind of person I strive to be and does not reflect the values of my family. It was an intense part of the season and I responded poorly to it. I want to apologize to the WSL, the officials, and supporters of this community. This sport has given everything to my family and continues to provide a platform for the world's best surfers. Good luck to everyone this season. Now, during the 2016 Rip Curl Pro in Portugal, Medina faced Jeremy Flores in round three, and had he won that exchange, the title race would have continued to pipeline. But Medina didn't win, and John Florence clinched his first world title. And towards the end of that round three matchup, Medina needed a wave in the 8-point range to overtake Flores, but his scores fell short, particularly 1 7-point ride, which was contentious. It's unclear what exactly happened after that. One thing is for sure, Charlie, don't surf, at least not this year through April. And I'm not sure where I grabbed that from. It might have been from Surfline.
It might have been in the comment section.
I think it was. There's a lot of good comments wherever I grabbed this. It was either Beach Grid or Stab or somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway. Interesting.
So we don't know what he said or what he did.
And one of the comments was, well, what about Philippe Toledo's dad? Isn't it? Yeah, his dad's just like really over the top.
Ricardinho
yeah.
Ricardinho or whatever. Well, he's over the top in terms of cheering and whistling and hooting and hollering, but I don't know that he's accosted anybody or created any problems.
Well, we don't know that Charlie, did Charlie accost?
We don't know, but in that Surfline article, they said in the heat, somebody watched the heat analyzer of that heat in that event. And Medina is seen congratulating Flores on the win, but perhaps Charlie wasn't so pleasant, it says. So I guess, I don't know.
Wow. Well, there you have it.
Yeah. Interesting.
I see Owen Wright's back on tour.
Dude, so I'm ripping. So psyched. I'm really psyched
on
that.
Is he on your
team? Not yet, but Owen, I was really worried about Owen. We kind of touched on it throughout the show, but I really felt like, dude, something serious is up with the guy, and head injuries are so sketchy. So he started posting Instagrams, I don't know, a month or two ago, but he was like riding a longboard. And I was like, that's not a good sign. If he's getting back in the water and he's only on a longboard, I'm not sure this is he's going to return to full form. But he did a QS event and looked like he was ripping, not necessarily up to his old form, but he was ripping, you know. And since then, he's posted other things like surfing proper overhead barreling waves.
Did you see the recent one, the backside one? Where was that? Somewhere in, was that Snapper?
It wasn't Snapper.
It looked like it was like Morocco or.
But it was warm water.
Yeah, it was warm water, but it was kind of dark and chocolatey, right?
Yeah.
But it was a legit.
It had to be Australia.
Legit mean sand bottom barrel.
Yeah.
Like a legit wave.
Backside.
Where if your head got hit, it would be of consequence if you slammed your head against the water there.
It reminded me actually when the clip first started, I thought it was a throwback to Peniche, Portugal.
Exactly. That's what it looked
where
like.
Where he busted his eardrum. And so I thought he was going to say like, oh, here's that one wave I busted my eardrum on 5 years ago. But then it said no. It's like, oh, good to be back in the water. And he's wearing trunks.
Yeah, the water's warmer
out.
Than Peniche.
Yeah, so it wasn't Peniche. But yeah,
somewhere.
It's good to see him returning to form for sure.
Now, here's my question to you. Like other sports, will the WSL have to adopt, or would it be wise for them to adopt some sort of concussion protocol? I mean, all it's going to take is for him to come out of the water after a wipeout and look sort of dizzy. And isn't it on the WSL to go, hey, man, we just can't have our athletes surfing with concussions, or it puts us in a liable situation, you know? Will there be concussion protocol?
I think you got to follow the NFL's lead or something, you know, because...
Which is over the top. They go out of their way to make sure that there's doctors there. Otherwise, the NFL would be liable. I don't think the NFL would give a crap, except for they sort of
now have to.
Right, because of legal reasons.
Well, yeah.
Liability.
Yeah.
So is WSL worried about that, concerned about that?
Do they
need to have a protocol, a doctor on hand, in the water, in the lineup, on a ski?
I'm sure they're worried about it. The answer to those questions, I don't know, because I'm not
What should they do? Do you think... They should have a doctor on site, on a ski, in the lineup at Cloudbreak, ready to rush out there. Because in the NFL, if you get hit, they don't wait for you to wave your hand. They just come out and grab you and say, it's not up to you. It's up to us.
Yeah.
Well, there'll be a doctor that has to call a timeout, stop the heat, go out there and check on this guy.
The answer of should they is yes, they should. But look, it's a business. It's like, yeah, you should have... Those like all sorts of things at those events fully catered with like drone shots, live streaming, like, you know, but you just can't do all of it all the time. So health should be put at the top of the priority list for sure.
How would you feel as an end user as the heat gets stopped because of
I would not be psyched on
protocol.
That. No, I'd be
slowing
like, suck it up, dude. Get back out there.
Yeah.
Like I would not be happy as the end user at all. Yeah. But okay. I don't know if I told you this or not. Kyle Tierman does a podcast now and he did an interview with Sean Dollar, the big wave. He's won like 2 XXL awards.
Yeah.
I think,
and he had a really bad injury. Right.
That was the most interesting part. This almost the entire show was about his head injury or not. He had multiple concussions over the years, you know, from surfing Mavericks all the time. So it was about him recovering from head trauma. That was the majority of the show. And all this new therapy, new meaning like it's not fully vetted by the scientific community, but it's shown tremendous improvement for him. So I found all of that to be really interesting. And there's, of course, all sorts of new research about depression and bipolar disorder related to head trauma, like Junior Seau, you know, committed suicide.
Yeah.
Like a lot of that gets traced back to this head trauma and concussion. So, it was really, really fascinating, and I'm not doing it justice by just giving you the cursory, but listeners who have any interest should go back and listen to that Kyle Tierman show, the Sean Dollar episode, because you're right. The WSL does need to be concerned about it.
Well, the NFL has this thing. It's called CTE. It's chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Encephalopathy?
Don't know.
Saying that wrong. They call it CTE, and it's the progressive degenerative disease of the brain found in athletes that have a history of repetitive brain trauma, including symptomatic concussions, as well as subconcussive hits to the head. And it affects boxers as well. And of course, this is what you're talking about. It's attached to Mike Webster was the center for the Pittsburgh Steelers who committed suicide. There's been, and so this is the type of thing that now does the WSL have to look at this and, like I mentioned, protocol. It's interesting. We'll see where it takes
us. With more science validating some of the effects, then yeah, I think you do have to start taking it more seriously. So in regard to the WSL, the 2017 Quicksilver Pro waiting period starts on March 14th.
Wow, it's so late.
It's late, but it's coming up, man. I mean, it's less than 2 weeks away. And there's probably a ton that we could discuss. We could do a full show of that. But I want to remind listeners that we do have a Fantasy Surf Clubhouse. So if you want to play Fantasy Surfer, by the way, it is Fantasy Surfer as opposed to the WSL's version of it.
Right.
FantasySurfer.com. Create a team or create an account, select a team, and then go to the clubhouse section and look for Surf Splendor. Last time, at the end of last season, we had like 450 members. So you can just play along for free. But then we also have a wager, and you can find out the rules for how to wager in that clubhouse on surfsplendorpodcast.com. Basically, we do $10 per event, and the winner takes all. So we had one instance last year where two people tied an event, and so we just split the winnings down the middle. But for the most part, winner takes all.
Do you know if is that website live? Can people start getting involved?
I think so. Yeah, you can always get involved. Oh. They never take it down throughout
the season. So March 14th is the start.
Yep.
And that's 10 days away, 9 days away, 11 days away.
11 days away.
So are we going to do another show before then?
I'd like to.
We need to do a show before then.
Okay.
A WSL. WCT preview show.
Let's do it. The end of next week?
Yeah, a week from today.
Okay.
Something like that.
All right, let's do that. When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. What else you got, Scott?
Man, there was another shark attack at Reunion Island. This has caused quite a big uproar, larger uproar than I even realized upon doing some research about this. But look, a few weeks ago, David, around 9:30 in the morning, a 26-year-old bodyboarder was killed while in the water at the Rivermouth Wave on the northeast end of the island. The spot was restricted to swimmers due to shark activity, according to the BBC. But the deceased bodyboarder and his friends ignored the signs. And this marks the 20th attack on Reunion Island since 2011, the eighth of which was a fatal attack. The shark scare peaked in 2013 when officials banned surfing, swimming, and bodyboarding on more than half of the coastline. But in 2015, 2 years after the ban, a 13-year-old surfer, Elilio Canestri, very sad situation, young man, was killed while surfing in an unmonitored area. Then in 2016, in response to the high volume of attacks, the government installed protective shark nets around portions of that coastline. But even then, a shark attacked someone by evading the barrier through a hole in the net. Hmm. Now, David, everybody in the surf world knows that Kelly Slater chimed in on this latest controversy, the latest attack. And that stirred up quite a shitstorm. And Kelly basically suggested, hey, maybe it's time to think about culling the population of bull sharks.
Right.
Obviously, if people are dying, we need to do something about this. And this caused a major deal, a bigger deal than I realized. I will say that there's a guy named Christophe Fontaine, who's of the Association of something or other, Sauvegarde de Requien. I can't speak French, but... And he basically is saying, hey, man, our friends are getting killed because of the conservation efforts. And we're sick of it. And so if they're going to kill our children, we're going to kill them. And if you are going to protect them, then we're going to kill you. This guy basically put out a death threat. He said, people like you are allowing my friends to die, eaten by sharks. And whether or not you get it or not, we don't give a fuck. You come here and we'll kill you. We'll kill your children, your family, and we'll piss on your grave and the one that you're dearest to. Because that is what you have been doing to us since the beginning. So these are pretty strong words from Christophe Fontaine. And that's just part of it. I mean, this has really sparked some major controversy. Now, Kelly Slater has since backpedaled.
You think so?
Well, here's his comment. Mm-hmm. This, you know, what got involved, what happened is that Paul Watson from Sea Shepherd got involved. A lot of conservationists got involved and went, Kelly, hold on, dude. Hold on here. Let's think this through. And Kelly recently put out a statement that said, I would like to address, and this is from Kelly Slater, I would like to address my comment about the recent bull shark attack in Reunion Island. I did not think my words through. It is easy to get emotional given the recent history with sharks that the local community has suffered, especially when young lives are lost. However, killing anything in hopes of a solution is not in line with my philosophies about life, and I don't believe are a long-term fix to an ongoing problem. This is a good time to put energy and intelligence into finding a solution that works for everyone, utilizing technology, science, and human emotion. I know a solution can be found that works for all parties. I'll continue to learn about and put energy towards efforts to defend and protect our oceans. Sincerely, Kelly Slater.
Hmm. You're right. That is a backpedal.
Yes, and I just found that this morning.
Oh, okay.
Now, a statement from the family of the gentleman who died. Our family do not want the death of Alex to be used to justify this or that, nor do we wish that one accused wild animals for the death of Alex. Alex was a great enthusiast and was fully aware of the risks he was taking. That's from his family. By the way, this Alex guy was also a shark spotter on the island.
Mm.
He knew what was going on, and he chose to ignore the situation and go try to catch some waves.
Hmm.
So, look, you can read a lot more about this. I mean, it's pretty in-depth. Obviously, it's quite polarizing, and there's...
It really is.
One side of the equation and the other side of the equation.
And Kelly really inflamed the situation by being such a public figure.
Which I told Kelly in his Instagram, I thought was good. I was like, look, I don't know if you're right or wrong. I don't know if I'm right or wrong. But the point is that you're making a statement about it. And if more pro athletes in positions of power would just throw out, hey, let's start talking about this, which is really what Kelly did.
He said,
let's just start talking
and
about it.
He said, I'll read every comment on my thing, which, by the way, are in the thousands.
Yes.
And I'll reply to those if I have time. And he did. I saw him replying to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So he was totally...
And so I applaud Kelly for throwing himself out there. You know,
agree,
like,
completely.
Look, He's not an expert. I'm not an expert. But you know what? We're talking about it right now. And yeah. It's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, we couldn't not comment on it on the show because it was such a big news story that lasted over the course of at least a week.
Yes.
And a lot of people had strong opinions about it, but I was apprehensive to bring it up on the show because I don't have a strong opinion about it. It's like, I don't know what the best thing to do is. And what it does seem to be the case is that the reason why there's so many attacks is because there's been this man has already gotten involved and done this conservation effort, and now there's tons of fish everywhere. So now the sharks are going into hyperactivity and overdrive to eat all the fish. So it's like, it's not like nature took its course and we're in the ocean and it's continuing to take its course. It's that man intervened at some point, created this surplus of fish, and now it's stimulating another part of the ecosystem, the shark population.
Yeah, you're right. That's really what the conservationists are saying, that look, when you kill something and take it out of the cycle there, something's going to fill that void. Yeah. Another species is going to come in. Like you just, you know, and again, we think we're pretty smart as a human species, but sometimes, you know, I mean, it's been proven we've done some stupid ass shit.
Oh,
know, Chernobyl, Fukushima, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. You're right. I'm not an expert. You're not an expert. The answer is let's talk about it. And That's why we applaud Kelly for talking about it. And by the way, the guy took a lot of heat. And everyone, I think, should lay off of him and be thankful that people are talking about it, no matter which side of the equation you're on.
I just don't understand people's vitriol. Like,
because
Kelly said openly, like, hey, I'm not an expert, but here's my thoughts on it right now. I'll listen to your feedback. And people are just like,
they immediately go,
you murderer.
Yeah.
You deserve to die. Like, it's like, it's what? Just like,
dude, step what? Back from the too much Red Bull.
I was like, yeah,
I know. I read some of the stuff. And I'm like,
so crazy.
Poor Kelly. I mean, he's just trying to have a conversation, and people are just going. They immediately, like, they don't even start with, "Hey, Kelly, thanks for your insights.
Yeah.
I think you might be wrong. Let me try to convince you otherwise. Here's some things you might, you know, I might suggest to you." Instead, it's just like, "You're an effing kook surfer." Yeah. You know, it's like, "Whoa, hold on here. I don't think you need to even be in this discussion."
And do you think that's going to convince Kelly to change
exactly.
his mind?
Thank
and
you.
And then, lastly. Do you live your life with that much ire? You just walk around all day feeling that amount of hatred towards strangers?
Sadly, and, people do.
Like, what the heck, dude?
Sadly,
go
people...
Go home and kick the dog and yell at your... They, like,
you
I
know
don't...
What?
What's
fear.
Happening,
people
dude?
Live in fear.
Yeah.
And self-centered fear. I'm not going to get what I want. They've got what I want. Or you're not going to give me what I want. Therefore, that's my basis. That's my default for everything. All my actions, words, and deeds are going to be based from that starting point.
Yeah.
And it's a super scary place to be.
It is bizarre to me. It's confusing to me. The other detail is I have like 8 to 10 important things on any given day that I need to focus my energy on more than the shark culling in Reunion Island.
I know.
And it's
know.
Like, yeah, I care about that from a global perspective. And
let me know how it goes.
But.
Right. Let me know how it works out.
Yeah, exactly. Dude. Like, I've got legitimate things. I've got brothers and siblings and like a girlfriend and like family. And like, there's just stuff that I got to handle today.
Yeah.
I can't devote a ton of energy to yelling at Kelly Slater about sharks.
Yeah. For hours on
end. Crazy.
To try to win him over.
And if you do have that much time and vitriol, reevaluate your life, dude.
Thank you.
Go to work. Get a job.
Thank you.
You know, like that, honestly, that's all part of my thought process when I'm reading the comments. None of it actually convinces me to change my opinion on the subject.
I know. You know? It's a weird situation, but,
yeah. Well, segue into the Kelly portion of the show.
Uh-oh.
Did you see the mesmerizing wave pool footage that he put out?
Yes. I put it on my Instagram. I've become really good at reposting other people's stuff.
I noticed. It means you don't have to create your own content.
I mean, who creates content these days? It's really about distribution.
You and I right here.
Right.
We're creating and we're distributing.
It takes so much time and effort. Let's just take somebody else's.
This is the like, we're in the Wild West right now.
Yes.
In terms of podcasting, like, this is the new frontier. You and I are breaking
new ground. I've been in this
ground.
Frontier. I'm like... I'm like Daniel Boone. I'm like,
you were Lois and Clark, dude.
Thank you. I'm like Meriwether Lewis.
You were hacking down like trees.
I'm on a mission from Thomas Jefferson to get GPS coordinates and survey the land and tell you, you know, what kind of fish stock is in the Missouri River.
It was pretty
as far
impressive.
As podcasting is going. That's a hell of an analogy.
It was pretty impressive what you did for us podcasters.
Yeah, I can tell.
Yeah,
I'm in the podcast hall of fame. Back when we called it internet radio.
Yeah,
didn't exactly. Even there was no term podcast.
No, I come from a long line of podcasters. Actually, my great grandfather was a podcaster.
Right.
It's a Scales family tradition.
So, tell me about Kelly. You were saying.
So, Kelly has been holding on, I guess, to this footage for a while from his wave pool, but it's the best footage we've ever seen from his wave pool.
It's insane.
Handheld GoPro footage with him getting barreled indefinitely, just sitting in a perfect barrel. And what's crazy is a couple of the images, there's not even a ripple of wind on the water. So, it's just this sheet glass, perfect emerald green barrel, and he's holding the camera behind him so you can kind of see past his body and out the tube, but then he'll actually look back at the camera. He's got these piercing blue eyes. The guy is gorgeous.
Oh,
he's the Silver Surfer, and I'm just like, wow, I'm mesmerized, number one, by the barrel, but now by those deep blue eyes. I can see into Kelly's soul. I could see what it takes to make 11 world titles.
Right.
And it was just like, this is hypnotic.
Yes.
It was the raddest footage I've seen ever of injury. It was like crazy.
It was so good. And you know what's weird about it is that it almost got overlooked. I mean, it didn't by us and by the surf world, but it just shows you how crazy social media is. Like, we're just inundated with so much stuff. Like, if that would have been the first video that went out when he announced the wave park.
Oh,
how insane that would have been. But because there was already the first video that went out when he announced the wave park, this one was like, yeah, okay, it's an insane edit for sure. It's like mind-blowing, but it's not even parking lot fodder, really. It's just like it happened, and next week we will have forgotten about it. Whereas
it's
the initial video that we saw a couple years ago or whatever, whenever it was, that's still kind of in our psyche.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised just that it isn't even more popular among the GoPro videos on YouTube. Like, there's probably videos of like...
Well, that left in Nambia, right?
That
footage that of Koa Smith is just mental.
Right.
Or was it Alex Smith? Koa. One of the Smith brothers.
They both were there, but the one that you're talking about is Koa.
Yeah.
But like, there's footage... Like, I just pulled up YouTube. Remember... The guy, the motocross racer, Robbie Madsen, put a ski on the
motorcycle. I've got a story about that.
And then, I know because that's in the news too. He did that at Cloudbreak, rode his motorcycle at Cloudbreak with a ski on it.
Yeah.
That has 25 million views on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and I'm surprised that Kelly's...
Is that the power of Red Bull or the power of the content? I mean, Red Bull distributes...
No, that was DC.
Oh, that was... I thought that was a
DC
Red Bull
project.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So, Kelly, I'm going to pull up his right now. His has 250,000 views.
Yeah.
So, it's just...
It's just like, another
how is
video.
It not, yeah.
Just another video,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, really. But, man, I want to surf that wave.
I know. And it does look like there was just the right amount, just the lightest offshore breeze. Like, it was just perfectly groomed, like you say. Not a drop of water. I mean, there's not a drop of water out of place. Anyway, the interesting thing is, right? Okay, so that's got to be the first wave. Because the thing with that wave pool is that you need 15 minutes for the water to calm down after a wave breaks. There's one wave every 15 minutes. And if in that 15 minutes the wind goes onshore or something, it's going to take longer for the pool to calm down. So that wave just looks like it was the first wave of the morning.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Why is he wearing a full suit in one wave and then trunks in the next?
I think it's two different days almost.
I don't think it could change that much. He's inland. The water temperature is not changing that much.
Yeah.
You think he's just toughing it out?
I don't know.
He's got to be.
Maybe he needed an Adrenone ad. He's like, I'll just put my Adrenone clothes on. He's probably wearing Volcom, though.
Probably.
I don't even know.
I think he's just toughing it out. I think he's just like, screw it. I'm going to go.
Maybe.
Yeah. All right. Well, do you want to use that to transition into the Robbie Madsen story? I didn't fully follow it, but I saw some
I know
of the
enough.
Headlines.
I just learned a little bit about it that because there was a guy, I know a guy that was out at
Puerto.
What happened? There was no, I'm talking about Todos Santos.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's
so,
right.
Todos Santos, Mexico, the island off of Mexico, big wave break. It's called Killers. And there was a bunch of guys out there. Not a bunch, just a couple of boats of big wave surfers that were out there one day. And then this helicopter showed up. And
2 weeks ago.
And this boat showed up with this Robbie Madsen guy, and they were trying to line it up so that he could ride that motorcycle off into the big wave and chase the big wave around or whatever he does on that motorcycle thing on the ocean surface.
But they had helicopters.
They had helicopters.
Full film production crew.
Yeah, and there was a whole crew of surfers out there that were riding the waves. And they're like, oh, God, look what showed up, you know?
Yeah.
And but apparently there were some words going down. I think Gary Linden might have said something to him, and a bunch of other surfers basically said, hey, beat it. And by the time... And there was words from the other side going, hey, we paid a bunch of money. We hired a helicopter. We're going to do this stunt, you know? And by the time they got their act together, the wind came up to such a point that it was this Robbie Madsen guy was unable to ride his motorcycle on the ocean surface in 20-foot Todos Santos.
Yeah. But, you know, to Gary Linden and the guys surfing it, they're like, dude, we've been surfing this place for decades. We wait for the right swell, the right everything. And now we're here. We put in all our hard work. You guys show up and just overrun the lineup. Like, you're not welcome here. Get out of here, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really kind of an infraction on nature, you know, to bring all this stuff into this kind of reserve or this.
Yeah, I don't know about that part. I mean, if there's a big wave contest there, there's a lot of stuff there. There's helicopters and all that crap, you know? But I just think that it's one of those things that, look, if you show up with a motorcycle and a boat and a helicopter and there's people already there, you're out. You just don't get a chance. It's just common etiquette. It's kind of like the jet skis at Jaws. If there's guys paddling, you're not allowed.
Right. Right. So, interesting, but I'm on the side of Gary Linden. Whatever he says, I agree
with.
Me
too.
There's a bunch... Go ahead. I was going to say there's a whole bunch of web surf videos that I want to point people's direction to.
Yes.
I'll have them posted on surfsplendorpodcast.com, of course, but Surfer Magazine just released, they're in the middle of releasing a 3-part film series called The Cradle of Storms, which was about the trip that Chris Burkhard did to Alaska with Josh Mulcoy, Alex Gray, somebody else, I forget who the third surfer was. But I mean, they remember the cover shot on Surfer Magazine with the volcano in the background?
Yes.
Covered in snow and Mulcoy doing a snap in the foreground? It's that trip. And, you know, you've been on plenty of surf trips. A lot of work goes into it. And a lot of planning. And then once you're there, loading up the car, driving to the spot. Well, in Alaska, multiply that by 10. Because it's never been done before. There's no paved roads on the island that they're on, literally. So they're taking ATVs everywhere, and it's frigid, of course. ATV ride from where they're camped out to where the waves are is an hour on muddy trail. And then you get to that spot, and it's like, you know what would be better is that other cove. So then you ride another hour, and then the winds shift. And so it's a nightmare. So none of that was... It's hard to convey that when they ran the story in the magazine a year ago, but through this video, they actually are able to really break it down, and they're doing it in 3 parts over the course of 3 weeks. Part 2 just got published last night. They're about 8 minutes long each, and they're definitely... So 8 minutes is bite-sized, and they're worth watching.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll check that out. As long as we're on this line of thinking, and you mentioned Alex Gray, and I know everyone's seen this video, but it needs to be brought up, is the recent drop, I think it was yesterday, of the big swell that all of Europe received, and of course Northern Africa and a whole African western coast there, Morocco, right? So Alex Gray just got the most insane pitted barrels in Morocco.
Yeah.
And I think it was just yesterday or the day before.
He posted two video clips.
Yeah. And it's just mental, and you got to check it out. And it's on my Instagram, and it's on Surfline, and it'll be on Boardroom Show, and it'll be on surfsplendorpodcast.com.
Yeah, I agree with you. I saw those clips and I was like, holy crap. Like, and he was styling. I love the way he took off and just like really.
It looked like he had a GoPro in either his mouth or in his hand.
Okay.
But check it out. I kept looking at it and going, I think there's a GoPro footage that we're going to see from that. But
okay. It
was just this mean sand bottom Moroccan point barrel that basically looked like backdoor pipeline, the way it just kept throwing sections. And you kept saying, oh, I don't think he's going to make that section.
Yeah.
And he just kept highlighting it.
But
through
long.
The super long. Like
yeah.
Long.
So a backdoor section, but 5 of them.
Yeah, maybe 3 of them. I was actually trying to go, okay, if this was backdoor, right about now, you'd think he's going to, another section might throw. Sometimes backdoor's got quite a few sections.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's mind-blowing. It's deep. It's draining. It's got that sort of sand-sucking quality to it. Sort of like mainland Mexico where they had the Rip Curl event, the search event. I forget the Barra. Sort of like Barra. It's got that Barra vibe.
Yeah. Bigger.
From the 2006 Rip Curl event.
But it was bigger.
Bigger. And just radical cool, but perfect. And have you, if you've never been to Morocco and you're a regular foot surfer, you have to go to Morocco. Yeah. In the wintertime, in February or March, it's regular foot heaven, and there's plenty of waves down there, and plenty, you'll have it to yourself. You know, the main spots have crowds, but there's so many waves down there. Super good spot to go to. And
I noticed Alex is off Volcom.
Really?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
I know, because that was his sponsor for a long time, and they actually...
That guy is a sponsor's dream.
Yeah, they also dropped Parker Coffin, too. I don't know if they're thinning the herd or what.
Well, obviously they are.
And then we actually talked about Connor Coffin being off Hurley. Yeah. He got picked up by Rip Curl.
Yeah.
Which we actually said that's probably going to happen. Well, that did happen.
Look, also, there's a bunch of red hot surfers. There's just not enough sponsors.
Yeah, exactly. So also in the realm of web videos, Dane Reynolds and Craig Anderson launched their new clothing line. It's called Former. And they've done it on the platform of the world of pornography. Like, you know, there's
what?
There's .com.
Oh, yeah, .xxx.
Yeah, yeah, there's .com, there's .net. I heard like 5 years ago that like porn was all going to transition onto the .xxx portal, I guess is what it is. And so I've never seen that be used before, but now
I don't know if that's a very good marketing move.
I don't
I'm not going to .xxx for anything.
I opened it at work, and then I was like, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't have done this.
Yeah, I don't think you should. Yeah, that's
but it's their clothing brand, you know?
So tell that to your boss.
Yeah. Former.xxx is what the website is.
Right.
So Craig Anderson, Dane Reynolds, and a skateboarder, Austin Gillette, I think is his name, started this clothing brand.
So the drop that Craig did.
Well, they used a surf video basically to drive a lot of attention to the website on the day that they launched the website. And the video is the main reason for going to that website. Like, Craig's video is super sick. It's all Craig. There's no Dane footage. And it's... you could criticize, you know, the stylized editing of it, but you can't criticize the surfing. Craig is shredding. He's getting these backdoor pits at various spots, rights and lefts, mostly Australia, maybe getting towed into a couple of them, but it's so sick. He takes off on a few of them that are, well, I mean, double overhead, just as wide as they are tall, setting up, backdooring the thing, and you're like, well, that's a closeout. There's no chance he's coming out of that. And he makes them. And he's so stylish. You know, it's radical. It's really rad to watch. So I'd check that edit. And he does some insane alley-oops and straight airs and really rad surfer.
Cool.
Yeah. Good to see. Did you check out their clothing line?
I typed in former.com to see what happens. I know it's .xxx, but I'm just wondering who owns former.com and nothing's coming up. I can't, it's like the site won't even load.
I read a story actually that a guy squatted on it. Like they said that would be, oh, no. They were actually going to call the brand Destroyer originally. Right. And when they put that information out there, some random dude bought Destroyer.com and then offered to sell it to them for $15,000 or something. And they were just like, we'll just change the name to Former. You know? Like, we're not going to do that. So anyway, did you look at the clothing?
I just what I saw on Beach Grit, I think, or like, weren't they kind of, didn't they launch with Beach Grit or something?
No,
or?
Beach Grit, they accidentally made the website live, and one of our listeners, I think it was Adam Jara, who's written a few articles for Beach Grit, found the site before they actually like blasted it out.
He
stumbled upon it.
Yeah, and he's like, it's here.
And then he tried to buy a t-shirt, and Dane emailed him back and was like, hey, sorry.
How'd you get here?
Yeah, okay. How'd you get here? And we're not live yet. We're not going to send you that. But, you know, would you mind? Because I think Adam even posted an Instagram about it, and they were like, would you mind taking that Instagram down? We're not ready to go live yet. And Adam agreed and took it down.
But Chaz and Derek got a hold of it somehow, and they were like,
Adam's
we're launching Former with or without you.
Yeah, Adam's been writing a couple articles for Beach Grit, so he fed it to them. But Anyway,
I haven't seen the clothes. Yeah. I'm neither for nor against the clothes. I'm sure it's killer. I'm just not. I'm a clothes guy. I'm not a. Look at me. I wear Patagonia. I wear what my wife buys me. I don't really care too much one way or the other.
Well, you know,
as long as it's comfortable and soft, I'll wear it.
But you have to have an opinion about it because there's so much hype leading up to it.
Well, I haven't seen it, but I don't really care. Like, to me, it's all the same.
I'm not saying you, Scott Bastow. Oh. I'm just saying, like, as a follower of surfing, you're going to have an opinion because there's a lot of hype.
Right.
And then Craig Anderson and Dane have defined surf style in recent years. Like, they're kind of the go-to guys. And
for what we wear or how we surf?
Both. Because Quiksilver designed lines of clothing after Dane, you know?
I disagree with your theory that we give a shit about what they wear because they surf good or even because they're in our in the mainstream of what I look at. I don't care.
They influence style whether you agree
with
them. Yeah,
they might.
Or not.
They don't influence my style.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
And I doubt that they influence. Maybe I'm wrong.
They're tastemakers, dude. Like, I'm telling you. That's why Quiksilver's
paying. You know what? You're right. You're probably right. I'm out of the loop.
Check it out. I go to the website. I, again, don't care about my appearance that much. So I kind of
The Chop Hop.
I side with you. The Chop Hop is a proof that I don't care about my appearance.
Chop Hop is awesome.
So anyway, I go to the website to check out the clothing. It's so average, dude. It's so average.
How is it average? You need to now elaborate. What's average about it? It doesn't jump out at you. It's not neon. What is it?
It's nondescript. It's just like regular,
something I could get at Costco.
A regular t-shirt,
right.
A regular long sleeve, a regular button down that's black,
right.
And then like a hoodie,
right.
And a beanie and a pair of socks that was on their website. And it's not like overpriced. It's not underpriced. It's like the button down $65 US, you know,
if I saw you walk in with it, I wouldn't go, oh, you're wearing what Craig and Dane are pushing.
Not at all. You wouldn't say that. Right. And you also wouldn't even comment on it.
Right.
You'd just be like, oh, you got a black button.
Yeah. Where'd you get that? Yeah. Men's Warehouse.
or anywhere. Like,
but isn't that the case of all clothing? Like, I mean, I would, do you know, for instance, I'm wearing a sweater right now. Do you know where the sweater comes from?
LL Bean.
No. But it comes from a surf company.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I have no clue.
This is a Quiksilver Waterman's Collection sweater. Wow. But the point is that, yeah, you have no clue because it all looks the same. It might as well be LL Bean. And it's the same with other surf clothes. It's like they're trying really hard to just be urban guy. Like,
well, so one of the articles I read about the launch of that was like they've really adopted the skateboarding aesthetic. Dane and Craig both have, which is a little bit more grungy. It's more like durable, probably.
Yeah, like you were at a Pearl Jam concert in 91 in Seattle or something. But that's fine, and I'm down with that. But I would ask you, isn't that what it all looks like? Like, isn't that what all of this clothing from all of these companies is more or less like?
I guess so.
There's like, because in the 80s, when the surf industry really took off with Billabong and with Quick and all of that, it was pretty loud. There was nothing like it. There was neon. There was like, you know, like Billabong had patches of this color and patches of that color, and
it was like distinctly really surfing.
It was distinct, exactly, and that's my point. Is like everything now is might as well be LL Bean or Patagonia or United Colors of Benetton or it's all the
Banana
same,
Republic,
man.
Yeah,
can you? I mean, you're wearing a Hurley t-shirt right now.
No,
what is it? Exactly, but it might as
plain
well
white
be
t-shirt.
It could be a Hurley shirt for all I know. Like. There's nothing, even the branding, even the label, you know, back in the day, Quiksilver was loud and proud about that little patch, you know, and I'm not for nor against it. I'm just saying, look, it's all the same. Like you should make yourself stand out if you're going to call yourself something special.
Yeah. Well, I don't get anything that they're doing. I'll be the first to say it. Like
we might be out of the demo.
We're definitely out of the demo.
I should
son. You wearing the Waterman's collection from Quiksilver, you are their target market, dude. I don't even think they do it anymore, by the way.
No, they don't. It doesn't exist. Quiksilver Waterman's collection does not exist.
So,
but isn't it a warm sweater? Wouldn't you purchase something like this for $25, $50?
Scott, I'm not going to touch your sweater. Quit asking me to rub your sweater. I know when you asked for that hug earlier, it was really kind of awkward. So check it, though. Like, I'll be the first to say, I'm a big fan of Dane Reynolds and Craig Anderson surfing. However, I do not understand or get the branding that they're going for with Former. And you're right. I'm probably not the demo. But it's like the branding is so confusing. You know, like You can't name what their logo is. I can't name what their logo is. I'm not sure what their color scheme is. When you recognize like that dark green, you know it's Starbucks. Even if it's on a different logo, you know the Starbucks green or Target's red. Or there's brand identities, you know?
Exactly. And like thank their you. Brand, that's all I'm saying.
Their branding is horrible.
And so and like, is this branding and that branding. Yeah, like yeah, yeah. All of it is, it's, you know, once you can see an H on some Hurley stuff.
Or they have those bands, like on the
right.
Wetsuit.
That's
the
all
two
you
bands.
Need, right.
Like now that's
smart.
Iconic
right.
for Hurley, you
for
know?
Sure.
And anybody else who ever bans their wetsuit now will be called a poser or like a copycat of Hurley, you know?
It's funny. So I was brought into Xterra wetsuits a couple of years ago just to talk with them about doing the show, the boardroom show and stuff. And I was like, you guys need to put some sort of marking on your show, some on your wetsuit somewhere, because, and I said basically what you just said. All you got, you can see a Hurley suit from a mile away and know it's a Hurley suit.
Yeah.
And you need to have that kind of situation with your wetsuits, whatever it is, however it is, wherever you put it. But yeah. It needs to be, oh, that guy's wearing an Xterra wetsuit.
Well,
I'm not sure if they take my
so
advice.
Not only has everything that Craig and Dane done with this company been kind of counter traditional marketing and branding, their Instagram handle isn't even former. Their Instagram handle is called luxury29.99. And it's just like, that's even more confusing. Like everything you've done is so confusing.
That's so against every marketing.
All of the imagery is so confusing. So I thought, well, so they're going to go anti-marketing and anti-branding, and that's going to be their branding, is the anti.
Are they that
so
smart?
So then I looked at the clothing. I looked at the clothing thinking it was going to be contrarian.
Yeah.
You know, like it's going to be something radical. And then it was just not. It was nondescript. And I was just like, what? That doesn't match this kind of punk rock aesthetic that your edit has and that your logo or your various logos and all your Instagrams have. This chaos.
You know, I have
chaos is their brand, by the way. That or that's not the name, but it is everything.
It's chaotic. I have some interesting insight from my 18-year-old son, who's right in the wheelhouse of Craig Anderson and Dane Reynolds. And yeah. I just texted him. I said, "What do you think of Dane Reynolds and Craig Anderson's new clothing line, Former?" And he just texted me back. He said, "I think it's rad, and I want to talk about it. When will you be home?" I'm watching my friend's heat at Seaside right now. I think Former is kind of like the Neat Essentials vibe.
Okay.
Which is interesting because that's Neat Essentials and...
is no logo.
Yeah, it's
no
all branding. Kind of like, yeah.
Yeah.
Rob Colby, right?
Yep.
And it's all... And so that's what Hank's saying, that he thinks it's... So that's interesting, right? So maybe you yeah. and I are just old curmudgeons with chop ops. But Hank knows about
you
it.
Wish you
the
had
thing
a
that I was expecting him to say, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
Because he loves Craig Anderson and Dane Reynolds. Like
yeah,
he's of course. That's the, he's their so anyway. That's good news for Dane and Craig.
Yeah.
Maybe it's working. I don't know.
Well, they clearly know something. Like they've made millions of dollars off of surfing working for surf brands, so I would argue they know more than I do. I'm just saying I'm confused by it.
Yeah.
Old man Scales is confused by the young kids and their punk rock clothing.
I'll see you at LL Bean.
But I do love the edit, and I loved
I do too.
Seeing Craig again.
I know. I was surprised how there's some pretty big, mean waves. He's
oh, yeah.
You know, like it's
and he's so casual. He's
yeah.
so casual.
He's the king of casual. He's like Rob Machado 2.0.
Joel Parkinson, 2.5.
Joel Parkinson's nowhere near as stylish as Rob Machado or Craig Anderson.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you.
Dude, he's the king
he's
of kind of
He's got like robot style, though.
Get out of town,
yeah. No,
dude.
I've never... There's something I've
Parko's
never liked.
So casual.
Something about...
Yeah, he's Australian.
I have nothing against the person or his nationality. I'm just... Something about his style. Look, a million people hate my style. I'm sure it's just an opinion, but... I don't think it's on par with Machado or Craig Anderson as far as uber groovy, like Ryan Burt style groovy.
I agree with you. Those guys are on a different level. Parko has it in the WSL realm, like in the competitive surfing realm. He's the buttery guy, you know. Whereas, anyway, moving on. One other video I want to point people's attention to is Ari Brown riding Ryan Lovelace's The Rabbit Foot asymmetrical finless board. In
that's
Bali.
Insane.
Did
that
you watch
so
that footage?
Rad. Yeah. Does that make you want to try one of those boards, a finless board?
It does.
He's absolutely going berserk.
It's the best surfing I've ever seen done on a finless board.
He does blow one wave, though. He goes out the back too far.
Dude, that thing barreled perfectly. That was the best wave in the video.
And is that Karamas?
I couldn't tell. Yeah. I don't know. But he actually slides up to the roof and does like a floater, like a 50-50 floater along the lip. And it's going to start pitching like perfectly. And he could have slid back down and got in it, but he slid out the back. Anyway, it's the best surfing I've ever seen done on a finless board. I will say it's also the best surfing I've ever seen done on a asymmetrical board. All that being said, I've ridden finless and I get exhausted from squatting for that long. Like, and he throughout the entire video is squatting, knees fully bent, like his butt's almost on the board, grabbing the rail, the outside rail most of the time, especially when he's bottom turning. It's freaking hard on your knees.
Yeah, man. It's a hard way to surf. I imagine you do have to stay low to kind of just be sensitive to the rail, because at any time the thing could spin out. So you want to be low to the ground.
Low center of gravity is key when you're going finless. But it's radical. It's radical to watch, and it opens your mind for like ways to ride waves with fins even.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's definitely a very exciting clip, and everybody should check it out.
Yeah. I got to wrap up because we're hitting the 90-minute mark, and I've got places to go.
So 10 international shapers have been selected to honor Al Merrick and the Icons of Foam tribute to the Master Shape Off. That's taking place at the Boardroom Show May 6th and May 7th at the Del Mar Fairgrounds. Of course, the Icons of Foam presented by U.S. Blanks. So we're pretty excited. I'm going to give you the list of shapers that are going to be shaping. And I mean international. We've got the defending champion, Nick Palandrani. He's from Santa Cruz, so he's representing Northern California. Gary McNeil hails from Kira on the Australian Gold Coast. He's an accomplished surfer in his own right. He owns an Australian national title, and he makes boards for Dave Rostovich. We've got Zach Flores, a 16-year-old Zach Flores from Encinitas. And Zach is one of the youngest, if not the youngest. He joins Taz Yassin from the Canary Islands as either the youngest or one of the youngest surfers to ever, or shapers to ever shape in the Icons of Foam tribute to the Master. So Zach. Wayne Rich, he's the first shaper that was selected by the Channel Islands and Al Merrick for this competition. And he's a two-time champion. He's won in 2010 at the Reynolds Yater Icons of Foam, and also in 2011 at the Carl Ekstrom Icons of Foam. Matt Kazuma Kinoshita.
Sweet.
Representing Hawaii, the Maui. Kazuma label out of Maui, Hawaii. And he was mentored by 2014 Icon of Foam honoree Ben Ipa. We've got Ryan Sakel, Arise Surfboards. He's a second-generation shaper. His dad, of course, from the Sakel Surf Shop in Huntington Beach. Ryan lives in Leucadia, works at the Christensen Moonlight Factory, and is a very good surfer in his own right and a great shaper. Chris Christensen, representing San Diego. Chris is a dear friend of mine. He was essential in formulating this shape-off concept when he and I traveled in Australia together in 2006. And Chris will be in the event. And he was a judge in the very first shape-off, Chris was. Johnny Cabianca. Johnny is another great surfer, but also a legendary shaper. And he shapes out of the Basque region of Spain. And Johnny Cabianca builds boards for Gabriel Medina. So more international flair there. John Pizel, originally from Santa Barbara. And representing the North Shore of Oahu, and of course, Pizel shapes board for the current WCT WSL World Champion, John Florence.
I've heard of him.
So we've got two world champion shapers in the thing. Rex Marshall is the last of the 10 shapers, another Australian from the central coast of the New South Wales region, state, I should say, shaping since the late 1970s. I went to high school with Rex.
No way.
He's from San Diego originally. And but he moved to Australia in 92. So we've got two Australians, a Brazilian from Europe, John Pizel from the North Shore, Matt Kazuma Kinoshita from Maui. Quite a crew, guys from Santa Cruz. So 10 international shapers going to take place, going to shape boards at the boardroom here coming up in 2 months, May 6th and 7th at the Del Mar Fairgrounds. So we've got a lot going on, and I'll reveal more in shows to come.
Cool.
Including Surfer Magazine doing their seminars and discussion panels. So it's going to be interesting stuff.
Very, very cool. I will be there.
Yeah.
So I've got a Duke and a Kook and a must-see moment that is separate from all the other videos that we've already discussed in this show.
Oh, my.
What would you like to hear first?
Well, let me hear about your Duke and your Kook.
My Duke is, it's a little bit of a somber moment for me, but it is my Duke. Rosie Hodge.
Oh.
For getting married.
I share your sorrow, my friend.
For getting married. Rosie Hodge, congratulations. We love you.
She's the most
brighten
beautiful.
All of our broadcasts
she does.
Of the WSL.
She's got such a sweet essence about her, right? She just seems like a sweet, loving child of the earth.
Yep. So she got married to a guy that she's been dating for years now.
Yeah.
He works for Electric as the global head of global marketing.
Yeah.
Ian Folk or right. Folky. I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
But they just got married. I guess it was 2 weeks ago. There was a couple of posts on Instagram from people who are at their wedding. So congratulations to you two lovebirds.
Yes.
Dukes of the week.
Absolutely. Congratulations. And I'm sure they're going to spit out some gorgeous looking babies.
Seriously, they're two beautiful people.
Right.
My kook is those who enabled this sewage spill that we've got going on in San Diego. 143 million gallons of sewage
raw
spilled
sewage, not
in
even
the
treated.
Tijuana River, and the toxic runoff then flowed into the ocean around San Diego. Now, I'm saying the kooks for those who enabled this to happen. It's rumored that this was intentionally done. Did you hear this rumor, Scott?
I haven't heard that part of it, but I mean, when you say intentionally, do you mean somebody said, hey, let's pollute the ocean? Or they said, hey, man, we got to do something here. We're going to have to open up this valve or we're going to have an overflow here in Tijuana. So let's just open up the valve and let it go into the river.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Look, the kooks in this, in my opinion, are the federal governments of the United States and Mexico, who haven't got a handle on what to do with this sort of binational treatment situation, sewage treatment situation. I don't know too much about it to comment like an expert.
Right.
But something tells me that we seem to have a pretty good handle on it here in the United States of America. Perhaps an intuition, a gut intuition, is that the problem really revolves around infrastructure on the Mexican side of the border. I could be wrong.
Well,
I doubt it.
The reason why I said that it looks like it was intentional was this is a quote from Imperial Beach Mayor
Serge Dedina.
Yeah. He said, this was like a tsunami of sewage spills. What's worse is it looks to me like it was deliberate. It saves the Mexican agencies a lot of money and pumping costs, and ultimately they can get away with it and do it all the time, just on a much smaller scale. So he's pointing the finger at the Mexican agencies, quote unquote. I'm not sure who those agencies even are. But this is complete rumor, but somebody I was talking to.
As opposed to
moderate rumor.
Incomplete rumor?
Yeah. So somebody I was talking to was like, maybe it's just an act of defiance against Trump wanting to build a wall.
Oh.
It's just like, you guys want to build a wall? F you. Here you go.
Oh, my God.
We're flipping the switch. Take some of our sewage.
Wow. That sounds like something you heard at
it's a conspiracy theory.
Huntington Cliffs or something.
It's not even good enough for the pier fodder.
Right.
It only takes place
had to
down
go north.
The cliffs.
Oh, my. Well.
So that's my kook of the week.
I'll tell you what. I do the surf report in San Diego on NPR KPBS every morning, and the water has a brown mustardy tinge to it, and I've been saying as much on my report. I mean, I sort of feel like if you don't, like, In a way, the Blue Pacific Ocean is something that the city of San Diego should pride itself on. The Chamber of Commerce should be coveting it and lifting it up and going, come to San Diego for our Blue Pacific. And the fact of the matter is, it's not blue. It's dirty after every rain. And so it's sort of our responsibility to bring this to light that, hey, the ocean's not as clean as the Chamber of Commerce wants you to think. And the more we raise a stink about it, the more that, no pun intended, the more that, you know, people are like, oh, it's not quite as, you know, like the Chamber of Commerce needs to kind of like, you know, I'm trying to stir the pot a little is what I'm saying.
Well, there's actual helicopter or drone footage, aerial footage, and you can see the runoff. Like you could see the brown.
Yeah.
Like coming up against the blue. There's like these brown plumes basically in the ocean.
Yeah.
Really gross. By the way, if you're going to get sewage from anywhere that you were forced to swim with, TJ would be my least favorite sewage. Like on the ranking of the worst sewage in the world, TJ is right up there, dude.
I'll tell you what,
you've been there. You've eaten their food. You know.
No, you know where his gnarly is at La Libertad in El Salvador.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've paddled up there with a white t-shirt on as white as yours. And there's a raw, sewage treatment facility on the point there that dumps sewage from
straight in.
Yeah. And I've come out and my t-shirt was brown. It went in white, came out brown, and never got white again.
Wow. Imagine what happened to your orifice.
The waves were perfect. The waves were so good, but it was brown the whole time. It was brown water, La Libertad.
Wow. Your ears will never be the same and your sinuses. My must-see moment among all of the surf videos that we've gotten this last week or two.
Which has been a lot.
Julian Wilson's Wayward.
I haven't seen that one. I've heard about it.
Well, it's 12 minutes long, so that might have been your stop point.
People are claiming it.
Well, dude, the guy is legit, man. There's an alley-oop in there that is the butteriest alley-oop I've seen ever. He does two backside big spins, you know, where it's a full 360 aerial, but he also shovets the board midway through it and sticks them so cleanly. It's like there's just tons of footage in it that any one of these clips would have been the most impressive clip on Instagram that month. And there's a bunch of them in the 12-minute video. It's all shot in Bali. Actually, Bali and Fiji. There's cloud break footage at the beginning. I really enjoyed it. If you're going to like try to pick a world title contender for this year, you're like, well, this guy surfs better than everybody, so he might be it. But, I mean, maybe not.
He's in there with Kolohe and Jordy as the greatest surfer to not be a world champion, right? Yeah. Kolohe, Julian, and Jordy. Those are the three that you got to go. These guys were supposed to be world champions by now.
Right.
And, you know, we shall see. Now, there are so many clips out there, right? Like, you could argue there's clips from this huge European swell that hit Nazaré that's just mind-blowing. You know, huge, you know, skis wiping out, guys catching,
yeah, that's right,
catching 90-foot waves, 100-foot waves. I don't know how big they are. They're just huge. They're ridiculous.
Infinity.
There's a lot out there.
So but, one, yeah. I actually forgot to mention this earlier in the show, but it's worth mentioning. Dion Agius made a surf film that he's had a really interesting distribution model for it. You have to email him to get the video.
Really?
But here's what's rad about it is, he gives you the file and you download it to your computer. It's 2 gigabytes. Like he sends you a high def file, but it's like you can't go watch it on Stab Magazine or Surfline or anywhere. You have to email him directly and then he sends you a note back. And here's the note I got from him. The movie's called The Smiling Bag. It's a 30-minute surf film. I emailed him. I was like, hey, Dion, heard about the film. Can you hook a brother up? And he replied and said, first off, I just want to say thank you for taking the time to email in Chasing the Movie. I'm stoked you took the time and that you want to see it. And it's been such an amazing experience to hear from everyone all over the world. Without talking too much, I've got just a few requests of you when watching. Number one, if you can, watch it with some friends and some beers if you're old enough. Even host your own mini premiere. And if you do, send me some pics. I'd love to see them. Number two, play it super loud, either with headphones or some nice speakers. Feel the bass. Piss off your neighbors. Number three, The Smiling Bag is free for everyone to enjoy. Please share the file with all your friends, your mom, your grandma, anyone and everyone who wants it. Sell it on the black market. Do whatever you want with it. It is yours, and I want you and your friends to enjoy it.
Well, that's cool. Good for
Rad,
you.
Rad, right?
I like that. That's what the internet's all about. Take it, enjoy it, sell it. Do what you want with it.
It's what this podcast is all about, Scott.
That's true.
Share it with friends. Dion, we're giving it to you
for
free.
We are embracing Dion's liberty there. I love that he's just doing that he's putting it out there for all.
You gotta love it. So
but you gotta email him to get it. It's sort of backwards.
Funny though, right?
It is. It's kind of cool.
I like it. So if you want it, you can email Dion, Dion Agius. His email is Dion, D-I-O-N, at Epochy, which is his sunglass company. Actually, just come to surfsplendorpodcast.com. I'll post a link to it because I don't want to try to spell that brand.
Right. Well,
E-P-O-H-K-E. I think that's it. I know those letters are in there. I don't know what order they're in. Anyway, the film itself was really good. Here's a funny thing about that film. He's a hipster and he hangs out with a bunch of hipsters and they try to make lo-fi edits with like a bunch of Super 8 cutaway footage and stuff and weird music. But it's easy to criticize, especially when I watch Julian Wilson doing the big spin and these crazy alley-oops and this super high-performance surfing. It's easy for me to then watch Dion's film and go, you guys are kooks. You're riding weird boards. But I didn't feel that way. What I felt was, you guys are having a blast. And what's interesting about surfing and what I enjoy about surfing is watching people have fun surfing. And so while I can appreciate Julian Wilson's high-flying aerial antics, I also enjoy watching these guys riding little soap bar shaped boards on little 3 foot lefts and having a blast doing it. So that's what the mentality that you should go into this film with. They use Billie Holiday on the soundtrack. It feels almost like a college art film or something to a degree. Not the most high performance surfing, but they're having a blast and it's fun to watch. So
cool.
Yeah. All I got, Scott.
All right.
I gave you my best.
I like it. And we'll check it out. Look, it's been a good show. We're going to have another show next week. And until then, adios and aloha. But not me, baby. I've got you to save me. So bad, best thing I ever had. In the world called man, you're so bad.
Right on. Thank you for persevering a full hour and 40 minutes of Surf Talk. We appreciate your listenership. We appreciate you sharing the show with friends. And we appreciate your donations. Keeps this show going. Like Scott said, we'll be back next week with an all-new episode, so look forward to that. In the meantime, check out surfsplendorpodcast.com for all the videos. There was a ton of surf videos that we discussed in the show, mainly that I discussed, but that are just available now. Plethora of A-plus quality surf clips and a wide, wide variety from Julian Wilson's, you know, insane high performance to the finless surfing of Ari Brown. Tons of stuff out there right now. Really good stuff if you have the time to check it out. You can do it all on surfsplendorpodcast.com. You can also leave a comment about today's show. And, you know, as I always say, if you listen in iTunes or wherever, whatever podcast app, rate and review the show there because that really also helps the show to grow. We want to stay number one in the world of podcast downloads across the planet. We're number one in the world of surf podcasts. So let's continue that trend. If for nothing else, then my fragile ego makes me feel good about myself. So thank you for that. And I believe that's it. The common denominator here, aside from listenership, is just that we're all fans of surfing. So I always have to remind you, I have to remind myself, when you don't have your headphones in listening to this, get out in the ocean, enjoy it, get a couple waves, and shred on, my loyal listeners. Shred on.